This episode may contain content of a graphic nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Mariah. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Body to Burial.
Welcome back, everybody, to July's episode. We are so thankful for your patience and your grace and your support while we kind of work within the summer schedule. But we are excited about today's episode. Nikki, I know you are super excited about this guest, and this was one you were really anticipating, shall we say. But okay. I think it's going to be good. So we have with us today, Bess. And okay. Bess is the owner of Honoring Our Animals on Instagram. That's the name there, Honoring Our Animals. And she is a pet loss grief counselor.
You know, I love animals. I'm going to love this one.
I know you are. I know this is right up your alley. So we will be exploring all things pet loss and grief and what that looks like and how to get supported through all of the different stages, and even that anticipatory grief that I know people probably associate more with humans, but it is pet related as well. So okay. I think Beth is going to walk us through all of this. You know, full disclosure up front, listeners, Nikki is the animal lover in the group, and I like animals. I like them. But Nikki is love on crack. So you guys are going to be in for a treat, because we definitely are going to have some very different perspectives on how we process pet loss. And I think it'll be a good conversation. And you're laughing at me, but I think it's going to be good. We're going to represent both sides of the coin, you know?
You love animals deep down. I know you do.
I love animals. I don't love them the way you love animals. Is that a fair statement, you think?
That probably is, because I like animals probably more than people.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, for sure.
You do. And I think I've literally had one pet since not living in my parents' home. Like, I'm just not a pet person.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
You know, and but I mean, I have more pets now because my kids have them and want them, but I would be petless if I were childless, I think.
Okay.
Well, you know? So here we go.
You might change your opinion at some point in your adult life, but
like when I become an empty nester, like maybe I'll like turn into the cat lady or something to fill the void. I don't know.
Yes.
As of now, it hasn't been a part of my journey. So my outlook is a little different, I think, than your outlook. So, you know, let's just see how this conversation unfolds. But I think it will be interesting, because I think you and I will be coming at it from different angles, which I think will be neat.
I'll probably be crying, and then you're going to be just like, why are you crying?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Let's bring her on.
Okay. Let me go grab her.
Hey, Beth, how are you?
Hey, guys.
I'm so excited to talk to you.
I'm stoked.
Yeah, I told Beth when we had talked originally that you were her person, because you're all about pet grief, and I don't get it. The pet's gone. Let's move on.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I am all about the fact that you don't get it, though. I'm so here for it. I mean, I love it. And I know Nikki's probably like, really?
Oh, it kills her. Yeah.
It's going to be a great conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I just haven't had the right pet. Maybe I just haven't been touched by a pet in the right way, but I'm really just like, okay, I don't know. I'm just not an animal person, though, either. It's like, yeah, they're great. I could do without.
Well, I told her, I was like, you know, my own personal therapist, whom I love more than life itself, she doesn't get it either. Like, she doesn't.
Really?
She refers people to me if they come to her like this, because she's like, I don't want to deal with it in my practice. And she's a hell of a therapist, right? But she was so grateful that when I was going through my experience, I had a separate pet loss grief person. And she was so grateful. She's like, oh, good. We don't have to get into that.
Oh, totally. I'd be like, I can't help
everyone.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And we can talk about this for 5 minutes and then we're done with the session.
Totally.
I have a friend at my work. I've worked with her forever. She always tells me that I need to stop telling people she hates animals, because I always talk about, like, we'll just talk at work. And then, but she got bit in the face by a dog when she was little. So then she hates animals, and she's all, people are going to start freaking out if you keep saying that. She's like, I just don't like them, and I don't get it. I'm all, you're heartless. Animals are better than people.
I mean, I'm with you on that, but I, you know, a lot of people have had tough experiences. They really have. And it's a hard thing. It's hard to be open.
So Beth, I'm familiar with grief therapy. So I'm assuming it's the same type of work.
Yeah. Any kind of grief counseling you would do, grief work you would do around a human. We're doing the same thing, but it's around our animals. A lot of people get referred to me by veterinarians who know me and know that I'm doing this work. Sometimes when a veterinarian gives a difficult diagnosis, oncologists, you know, obviously send people to me. Also, a lot of word of mouth just from current and former clients. But my Instagram, which is at Honoring Our Animals, is a huge way that I connect with people because I put out twice daily content specific to both anticipatory and post-loss pet loss grief. And a lot of people use Instagram like Google now. So they type in pet loss. And if you go to Instagram and type in pet loss, you're going to find me because I've got a ton of content and content that really resonates with people. And I have a big community on there that people are very involved in. I also do a monthly live pet memorial service where people can submit their animals' names and have their animal honored in my service. So a lot of people find me also through Instagram and the things I do on Instagram.
So when people are getting a diagnosis or it's an impending, you know, their dog's a senior, that's when they can contact you too, not just at the end and afterwards.
100%. Frankly, I'd rather have people come in anticipatory if they have that option. Of course, not everybody has the option, right? Because many deaths are traumatic, sudden, and we have no way of knowing. But for many of us, myself included, which is how I got involved in this work in the first place, we get a diagnosis, we panic, we feel like we don't know how we're going to make it through. We don't know how to show up for our animal and help give them a good death. We don't know how to manage our own roller coaster of emotions that we're experiencing when this is going on. You know, the things that are going on in anticipatory grief are so difficult. They are financial strain. There's emotional strain. There's logistical strain. There's often physical strain, not to mention spiritual and cognitive strain. So there's so many things going on that make anticipatory grief difficult. It is an important time to have support. Many people coming to me for anticipatory work want to know, how do I decide about euthanasia? When do I decide? When will I know it's time? And obviously, that's not a decision I can make for anyone, but that's something that many people want to talk through, process, get a place to work through that idea alone, in addition to all the other challenges that come with anticipatory grief. But you know, the beautiful thing is, if we know it's coming, if we have some time to prepare, we can do so much to strengthen our relationship with our animal and give them an amazing send-off, which is what I hope every animal can have.
We just had to put down 2 years ago, our dog, he was 17, and it was all those emotions of, it was probably about 2 to 3 weeks before he had passed that, you know, you kind of, you see the signs and you know it's coming. And even though they're older and you know this is going to happen, it's, you have so many emotions of, is it time? Is it not time? And then guilt. And then you feel guilty for even thinking about it. And then it's because a lot of times they have accidents or vomiting or whatever. And then I would feel guilty getting upset that I'm cleaning up vomit again or pee again. And I would always feel so guilty because I'm thinking this isn't going to be forever. And I just went through a bunch of different emotions with it. And I kept thinking, when is it going to happen? Or is there going to be a sign? And I need to know for sure, and blah, blah, blah. And then this one day I just knew. And then I called, we had an in-home euthanasia, which was, I actually feel guilty for not doing that to my other pets because it was such a great experience. Mm-hmm. And I needed that. Like, my soul needed it at the time. And I just needed to have him be comfortable because I don't think I could have handled it if we had to go to the vet, which there's nothing wrong with that. It's just in that moment I needed that. And I'm glad that we did it that way.
I'm so glad you brought that up too, because many people still don't know that in-home euthanasia is absolutely an option most places in the United States and definitely around the world as well. And it's still something that not a lot of people know is even an option. So there are big national companies that do it. There's also many local veterinarians and hospice veterinarians. People don't know this. There are hospice veterinarians. So if you have an animal that you know is in their final weeks or months, you can get a designated veterinarian who can come to your home and do the hospice checkup type visits and then also come back. Yes.
What?
Yes. Right. I know. It's so good. It's so good. And then they are also the person who does the euthanasia. So you already have a relationship with them. They've been there before. So yeah, there are so many more resources available now than ever before, but we still need help spreading the awareness and spreading the word. So I'm really thrilled that you mentioned that, because hopefully some of your listeners will find out this is a new option that you can do if it works for you. It's a great option. That said, if you are not able to do it for whatever reason, in my personal story, I couldn't do it. You can still give your animal a great, wonderful, peaceful death, even if you have to do it in an emergency hospital or at a veterinary hospital.
Yeah, exactly. And I tell everybody, I'm like, listen, this was the most beautiful, sad, it was horribly sad, but stress-free process. So yeah, if you could do it at home because it is so fantastic for you and the whole family.
Totally. And can I give a pro tip about that too?
Yeah.
I recommend if anybody listening is in a position where they're considering this as something that they might want to do, even if your animal is stable now, even if we think this might be months away, if it's a cancer diagnosis or kidney failure, whatever it is, do your research now while you are still, even though you're in anticipatory grief, do it now before things become emergent. Find who's doing this in your area. Find a company that can do it and get in their system. Make the call and say, I'd like to use you, you know, when the time is ready. Make sure you like them. Do a vibe check, right? Get all your information in because it's very hard when things cascade for your animal, if things go downhill quickly, to be like doing this research and like making the calls. And if you're already in the system somewhere, A, you might be able to get an appointment more quickly than if you haven't made the initial phone call. And B, you already feel comfortable, you know, who to call, what the process is going to be. You've already talked it through. So this is one thing anticipatory grievers can do to help themselves before things get dire. Make these arrangements, make these plans, and already be in the system somewhere so that it's only one phone call you have to make and everything's all set.
Great advice, because I did the opposite. I did the, where at the very last second and I was scrambling because I felt guilty calling earlier. Mm. I don't, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like I felt like really, I don't know, like not like giving up, but I just felt like, I don't know. That's good advice. Cause I should have done that. Cause I kind of scrambled at the end.
Nikki, how would you have known to do that if no one ever told you that or gave you that exactly. advice? This is not yes. information that's like out there. You know, we live in a grief avoidant, death avoidant culture, particularly around our animals. And by the way, I love veterinarians, but many veterinarians don't want to talk about these details, you know, because veterinarians are all about preserving life. They're trying to help their clients and their patients live longer. And so where would you have heard that? So when you are shooting yourself about that, which I heard you should, you know, go back to that moment and be like, I didn't know. You know, I didn't have that information at the time. You didn't have Beth Bigler sitting with you in weekly anticipatory grief counseling sessions to give you that advice. So go easy on yourself there, my friend.
I know it's hard sometimes, though.
Well, yeah. And, you know, you mentioned guilt a lot. And look, guilt is the number one thing people are coming to me with, whether it's anticipatory or post-loss. There's an added layer of guilt that happens specific to pet loss grief that is so challenging because the animals are completely in our care. We feel responsible for everything about their life. We feel like if we cannot extend their life or treat a problem, we have somehow failed them. And for those of us who have maybe an extra high inner critic or are high achievers or perfectionists, any of those things, the critic and the guilt can work together to make things really challenging. So it's very common to have all this kind of guilt going on both before and during and after a loss. And it's something that, you know, we do a lot of work on in my kind of work because guilt can be really oppressive. You know, like you said, you internalize it, you walk around with it, it's really heavy. And for some people, it gets in the way of kind of moving through some of the other aspects of grief because the guilt is so heavy.
How long have you been doing pet loss grief? Is this something you always wanted to do?
Does anybody wake up and as a kid, is like, I want to work with dead pets. No, I have a very unique story. I grew up as a writer and I ended up working in Hollywood professionally when I was 18 years old as a writer and a producer and spent my whole career in film and television in the entertainment industry. And I have always had, obviously, a passion for animals and a passion for mental health. I've been in therapy since I was like 12. So, you know, love therapy. But I did not really set out to be in this field. And it was not until I had an experience of my own with my soulmate, Arnie. Oh. Arnie's a cat. He's an
cute
orange and
name.
White. Yes, thank you. He got a 30-day prognosis on a really crappy cancer when he was only 11 years old. And I thought I would die. I did not think I would live through it. I didn't know how to face a world without him. He was my absolute rock through all kinds of challenges and trials and tribulations. And I thought I could get him to live till 40. And they told me he was going to be dead in a month. So I sought out my own pet loss grief counseling myself. And I found the most amazing woman who was pretty much retired. She was really at the end of her career, but I got her just in time. And the first time I talked to her on the phone, I felt like, okay, I'm going to be able to get through this. Like, she's got me. You know, I just had that feeling. And so I started working with her. At the same time, we mounted a pretty big fight for Arnie's life. We did some chemo and cats and chemotherapy is kind of experimental, but it worked and we got a remission.
Oh, wow. And
even though we got that remission, I kept doing my work with my pet loss grief counselor because the work that I was doing there was so interesting. It was so profound. I was understanding things about my relationship with him. I was understanding things about my fear, my anxiety. I was understanding, you know, why does life without him feel like something I don't want to do? So I just found out of all the different kind of therapeutic modalities I have done, and I have done many of them, that this work was just profound for me personally. But about 6 months after Arnie's diagnosis, we were there at the animal hospital for a regular checkup. And there was a woman there in the waiting room. She was like in her 70s and she didn't have an animal with her. And there was a dog across from us with a couple, and the dog had a seizure right before us. And it was very scary. Oh. The vet techs came and got the dog and took the dog back. And the woman next to me just burst into tears, and something just came over me. And I just got up and I sat next to her and I took her hand and I said, "What brings you in today?" And she told me that her 3-year-old cat had ingested some lily water. PSA, lilies are very toxic to cats. They are fatal. So don't give a cat owner lilies for Easter or any other time.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. And of course, this woman didn't know that. Can you imagine her guilt? She was feeling guilty. She brought lilies into the house, and now they were telling her that the cat probably wasn't going to survive. And so I just felt like I knew what to do in that moment. I knew what to say. I knew how to support her. My husband came and got Arnie and took Arnie home. Arnie was fine. He did his visit. I stayed with this woman. I stayed through the euthanasia. I made sure she got home okay. And we were there for about 7 hours together. And at the end of the night, I walked out of there. It was like midnight. It was dark. And I looked up at the sky. It was so dramatic. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I was like, this is it. I was like, this is my calling. And then my next thought was, but I work for Lionsgate. How am I going to do that? I mean, at this point, I'm like creating and selling reality TV shows for a living. That's what I did for many years, right?
That's a little different.
Super different. And I'm like, how am I going to do it? And then my next thought was, well, maybe when I retire, right? I was like, oh, maybe when I retire. Okay. So flash forward 6 more months and a year after Arnie's first diagnosis, he got a clean ultrasound, clean blood panel. We were like really celebratory. Like he was great. He had a couple other like health stuff going on, but like cancer was not there, not likely to return. And about a week after that, blood work came back. He was sleeping in bed next to me like he always did. And he wet the bed and he didn't move out of it. And I thought, well, that's weird. We took him to the vet. And about 4 days after that, we had to euthanize him because a different cancer had come into his body. It had overtaken his whole body and he could not continue with life.
Oh.
And there was nothing we could do. There was no fight to be had. There was no chemo. It was a total blindside. It was also the last day of the first trimester of my pregnancy. We were completely just, you know, blindsided.
Yeah.
And so I had to move through that very deep and profound grief. And grateful that I had done so much anticipatory work. And grateful I had done all that grief counseling beforehand because I gave him a good death, as good a death as I could do. Wasn't perfect, right? None of us are perfect. But I did the best I could. And I then realized, this means I need to change my life and I need to do this and I need to work with others and I need to help other people through this. Nothing matters more. There's not any TV show I can create and sell that's going to mean as much as being able to walk somebody through this. And so that is when I just began to change my whole life and start my training, start my certification, start my mentoring, did a lot of training, a lot of work, opened up my practice. Here I am years later. Full time. This is what I do. This is all I do. This is what I do. This is my mission, my calling. And I could not be more fulfilled. It's the best work I've ever done.
Did you ever keep in contact with that lady?
I sure didn't. I keep thinking one of these days, because I tell this story frequently, because I want to tell people how it happened. I keep thinking one of these days she might find me. I wish I had like gotten her contact info to kind of follow up with her. But when we parted, she was okay. You know, she really was. And she had said to me, like, I can't believe you were here. It's like you were an angel, you know, but she's like, I feel like I'm okay. And I think she was, you know, and so I sort of didn't feel like I need to get her number and follow up, you know.
Yeah.
She seemed all right. But one of these days I keep thinking maybe she'll reach out to me, because I think if she ever heard me talking about it, she would remember. And
that's exactly.
Yeah.
She would never forget you in that moment. No. There's no way.
No. And I will never forget her. You know, I'm grateful to her. I'm so deeply grateful that I had that moment, because I think it may have taken me longer to figure out that this was my path. And this is something that Arnie and I can do together. And one of the biggest reasons people come to me is that my biggest message to any griever is that your relationship with your animal can continue. It can evolve. You can grow with it. I tell people this, and I mean this. My relationship with Arnie today is stronger, more evolved, and deeper than it ever was, even when he was alive, because it's continuing, because it's growing, because he's included in my life, because he's an honored ancestor pet. My son, who never got to meet him, but who shares his name. I named my son's middle name after Arnie.
Oh, I love it.
He knows who Arnie is because Arnie's a presence in our household, even though he's not Earthside. And so people need to hear that. They need to know that that's okay. And sometimes they come to me because they want tools about how to do it. But for me, like, what better way could I honor Arnie than to take his gifts, lessons, guidances, and teachings, put them into action, and support people through this? So I view this work also as something I'm doing with Arnie in honor of Arnie. And like, we are doing it together. And I feel like he helps me do it too. And now the longer it's gone on, I've had hundreds and hundreds of clients now. I wonder if Arnie, like, whoever his spirit is he like, is he meeting all these animals of my clients that I'm working with? And was he kind of doing the same thing on the other side, whatever that other side is? So, you know, I feel like it's a collaboration between us. And that also keeps me extremely connected to him. And that's helpful to me in my grief.
Oh, yeah. We had a golden retriever. His name was Norman. And he died at 9 years old. He got cancer very quickly. It was super traumatic. And my mom would always say after he had passed that sometimes she would see him like out of the corner of her eye. Like she can't explain it. And she's like, I swear Norman is around. And the craziest thing is the day before she was passing away, I was in the kitchen with my aunt and I'm talking to my aunt and I swear to God, out of the corner of my eye, I saw Norman like walking down, like it was the weirdest thing, walking down the hallway. And I told my aunt, I swear to God, I just saw Norman out of the corner of my eye. I feel like he's here because that was my mom's like special dog. And I really believe maybe he was there to comfort her. Maybe he was there to be with her. I don't know. It's weird.
Yes. And you are not alone. I have heard versions of this story with animals. I yes. And so to that, I say, thank you, Norman. Thank
right?
Norman. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Because it felt like he was there. And it's not like I'm like looking and he's like, hi, how are you? You know, it's just in the corner of your eye. Like you see something, but you don't see it. It was very weird, but it made me feel good because my mom would always say, I feel like Norman's here just randomly, like not during that time, but just throughout the years, and just made me feel good that we used to call him Big Norman, that Big Norman was there.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
And I hope it's true because I feel like it is. So you never know.
I trust what you saw. I trust your experience, you know?
Yeah.
This is what I always say to people about signs and, you know, feeling like your animal's connecting. And first of all, I trust the source, right? I trust you. I trust you if you feel your animal's there. I trust you that it's there. And none of us have the answers. We don't know. You know, that's above all of our pay grades, right? So I say when we see a sign or a perceived sign, we just say, thank you, Norman, come again. You know, thank you, Norman, more please. And just welcome that magic, you know, and what a comfort for you. And I'm just thinking about your mom feeling so comforted by his presence too. What a gift, absolute gift. A lot of people call those soul dogs or soul cats. But I've noticed sometimes I work with clients who are older who've had many dogs, right? And they're coming to me about one specific relationship. And so, you know, sometimes I say, oh, you know, Maddie was my soul dog, but Norman was my heart dog. And then so-and-so was my spirit dog and so-and-so was my angel dog. And I'm like, oh, this is so awesome. Like, you know, because a lot of us have one that's like very profound, like Arnie for me. And I call him my soulmate. I believe that that's true. But I also know life is long and full of surprises and more animals. And, you know, maybe I'll have a soul cat and a heart cat and a spirit cat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or and then I'm like, I wonder if it's like that movie, A Dog's Purpose. That kills me. I can't watch it.
Oh, I can't. Nope.
It is the worst. Me and my family have watched one and two because we like to torture ourselves.
Oh.
And
emotional and so, cutting.
Yes, it's terrible. It's awful, but we have to do it to ourselves because we just love anything with dogs. Yeah, that one, I'm like, maybe it's Norman and he comes back in the next life and he's just trying to come back hang out with me. But yeah, no.
That's right. And obviously, this is a big topic I work with people. When is it the right time to adopt? When should I welcome another animal? And of course, there's no right or wrong answer on that. Although there's sometimes when there's things to consider. But many of my clients have had the experience where a new animal comes into their life and man, the animal's got some traits in common with the older animal, or you feel like it's some sort of message or sent from the other animal or something happens. It's just kismet, you know, and And a lot of people are looking for those sort of signs. Even myself, when I was ready to adopt, I had waited 3.5 years. And when I was ready to welcome other animals, I was looking for a sign and I got one. So I think, again, we don't know how it works, but I remain very open to all possibilities.
We waited a year to get Marty and Mabel. And
I love those names.
we got corgis because my kids, they love this one corgi that has his own like vlog and Gatsby. And actually Gatsby has cancer. He's going through cancer treatments. Oh. And my kids just bawl every time they update. And they were devastated as if like Gatsby was their animal. But they feel like it is because there's always the funny videos with him and, you know, whatever else.
And, you know, because of my background in entertainment, I work with a lot of high profile people from entertainment and tech, but I also now work with a lot of, I would call high profile animals from Instagram, right? And I've worked with people now who are very public figures who are going through this loss. And for the guardian of those animals, it's an extremely complex experience of like, how much do I share? What do I share? Do I share that my animal's sick? Do I not share? It's a really, you know, kind of what social media has done to make so many animals so beloved, so famous. And then when we are trying to move through that death and grief process, it's a really complex thing for guardians, which is sort of a new problem in grief.
Yeah, I could see that would be hard for the owners, that that is not only their pet, but that's what they do every day is make this content with the pet. And then that stops. That's got to be really hard too.
Massive. It's massive. Yeah.
Like life changing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Mariah, do you have a question? I don't want to hog this whole session.
Hey, Mariah, what are you doing lurking over there?
Yeah, just, you know, creeping.
I mean, I have to say I sit on the other side of the fence. I hear what you guys are saying, and the connection that you have to your pets does make me feel a little heartless. And I will also, disclosure, say maybe I just haven't met the right pet, but that has just never been my experience. And I just haven't been impacted that way. So it's just a very hard thing, I think, for me to understand and to not feel judgmental and cold hearted when somebody else is obviously going through an emotional loss.
Your honesty. I love the honesty, though. You know,
I know, I'm right. I'm very,
you
know, Mariah, mean.
Can I ask you, though, like, do you have that same response about human loss? I mean, do you also kind of feel like people make too big a deal about human loss?
No, I don't think that. I guess I can rationalize that easier just because it's like, oh, it's your mom. Like, this person taught you things or showed up for you or is going to miss out on these things. And I guess I just don't have that sort of, I feel like this is now turning into a very like, let's analyze what's wrong with Mariah. But
well, I'm curious because some people just sort of about grief and loss are feel that way in general. Just like, you know what? They had a good life. Move on. So I'm curious if there's a difference for you.
Yeah, I don't think that. I definitely think, okay, if I lost X person, I don't even think I could like continue breathing. I wouldn't want to live in a world where they don't exist. Like, so I can get that. The pets to me just seem not that.
Did you have pets growing up though?
I did have pets growing up, but I will say my mom was the type of and maybe she didn't really like pets. She was the type of person that our pet was not integrated into the family. Like we had dogs, but they like were outside. And when they came in, they slept in the laundry room. Like they didn't sleep in our rooms. They didn't sit on our couch. Like they were very like just an animal versus like a family member.
Yeah.
I guess. So when you frame it that way, it's kind of like that's how I was taught to view animals, I guess.
I think that's your problem. That's your problem.
And well, then look at that. We solved my life problem in like less than 3 minutes.
Yes.
And I would not call this a problem. I don't think you have a problem, Mariah. But what is interesting to me, too, is like, what would help you show up better when someone does say to you, you know, I'm having a really hard time. My dog died. Is there anything that would help you not roll your eyes, or can I help you figure out what to do there?
I truly believe I'm not the only one on the planet that feels that way.
Yeah. No, you're not.
But I definitely do feel like I would not know what to, like, okay, let's just frame it this way. When Nikki called to tell me about her hamster, she had a hamster, her and her kids, Hobby Lobby, right? That's its name, Nikki? Yeah. Hobby.
It was Hobby.
Yep. So shout out to Hobby. She, like, called to tell me the story, and they got her cremated and they like put its little paws on like the thing. And I'm trying so hard, even now, even retelling you, not to like just bust up laughing because it's the most ridiculous sounding thing to me. But to them, it was like, this is our hamster. We love it. Right. And I'm just like, oh my God, you did what? You did what? You spent money to get this hamster cremated and to save the paw. Like, I just can't. Rationalize it.
Well, again, I love your honesty. Yeah. This is so great. Nikki, did she ever say anything to you that was like offensive or mean or that hurt your feelings?
No, I don't think so at all. Okay. No.
So you can rein it in, Mariah. You can think it and you're not saying the mean things. That's good because a lot of people say the mean things. True.
No, I hope I wouldn't. I think I would be like, oh, that's too bad. Well, you know, we got to carry on. Life goes on. I would probably say something like that.
No, because I don't think you said anything because I also told you that it was Reese's birthday. That's all I wanted for his birthday was this hamster. So we got the hamster before his birthday and the hamster died on his birthday in his hands. And thank you.
That's when you put all the context in. It's awful.
Yes. So if you would have told me to get over it. And so then I had to get it cremated because what are you going to do? Bury him in the backyard?
Why not though? Because here's the other thing to that. Like if my kids ask for it, I will do it because it's my kids and I love them. But my knee-jerk reaction wouldn't be like, I'm going to bury this hamster or I'm going to cremate this hamster.
Mariah, if you think about yourself as, this is a genuine question, if you think of yourself as someone who is sort of trying to model for your kids how you, and this is a personal values thing for you, like how you want death and grief and loss to be experienced by them, would you do it differently? Like, would you not put the hamster in the trash because you're modeling for them?
Yes. I would do it differently. I probably would give them a platform to express their feelings, ask them if they want to write a letter, or I'd ask them, do you want to bury them? What do you want to do? Like, their aunt's dog died and they have a little pet cemetery. All the kids went down there and they had her wrapped in a blanket and they uncovered her and the kids got to pet her fur and my son played his guitar and they put flowers and pictures in the grave before they covered it up. So
beautiful.
They've done the things. And so, I mean, if they came to me and were like, hey, I want to bury X animal in the yard, I would absolutely guide them through that because they want it, but it's just not something I guess I need.
It sounds to me, I'm not a therapist, but it sounds like maybe that you're up a little different.
I mean, our pets were not part of our family. Definitely not. And when I hear you guys talk about it, I feel bad because here you guys are so sad and you're like grief ridden. And I'm just like, okay.
Maybe you haven't found your animal. Maybe that's your problem. Yeah.
I feel like this episode is going to get me a lot of hate emails.
I hope people are impressed that you're willing to be open and honest about it because, you know, if you go to my Instagram, I spend a lot of time and a lot of time with my clients. Like, how do I respond to someone who says to me, go get another one or it's just a dog or stiff upper lip, you know, it is really cutting for people who are experiencing this deep grief. And the truth is, Mariah, we're giving you a hard time, but.
Well, but I also don't want to be that person. I would hate to be dismissive of Nikki's grief when her kids are upset about her hamster. So I think there is an important conversation to be had to be like, hey, like just because this feels insignificant to you doesn't mean that it's not impacting this person in a profound way. And I think off the cusp, I'm very easy to say, oh my God, eye roll. But if I can sit with it and I hear Nikki talk about it, I can understand and respect that she's going through something that maybe I don't understand, but I would like to show up for her and be supportive.
And that's a beautiful thing. And I hope that anyone who wants to give you some hate about true feelings can also respect that you also want to grow and you want to do better and you want to be a support to people. You know, one of the things too is that the whole constellation of why you have those feelings around animals, that's a much bigger thing about your life in the same way that people who have, you know, really close attachments to animals have other things in their constellation going on about why their dog or cat is so important to them as well, right? Yeah. And there's just two different kind of pieces on the spectrum. But I would say to help you and anybody else listening who also struggles, because you are not alone, my friend, you are not alone. And by the way, I know good people, great people who feel just like you do. Right. And I don't think you're missing a chip or that something's broken. It just doesn't resonate with you. Right. So one of the things for you, if you encounter someone who is going through an animal loss, is just internally, Mariah, just say like, I'm going to treat this like it's a human loss. I'm just going to treat it like it's a human loss. And then you go ahead and do anything, say anything that you would do if it were a human loss. Because, you know, it's going to take too much time to get you like on board with like animals. So we don't have time for that. Just mentally just flip a switch and say, I'm going to treat it like it's a parent or a child or a spouse.
I mean, I can do that.
You can. I know you can. I know you can. And it's just a mindset shift. So if you'd send flowers for a parent loss, send flowers for the cat. If you would send a check-in text, hey, how you doing? How you feeling about hobby? Send really, oh, truly hobby. Just acknowledging, right? Anything you would do for a human loss and really checking in. What I tell everyone to do, whether you get it or don't get it, is when you find out that one of your friends who is closely attached to their animal has lost that member of their family, mark it in your calendar, mark what day it was, and just put a reminder in. It's so easy. We all have automatic calendars. Put a reminder in each week for like the next 6 months, and then put a reminder in at the 6 month mark, put a reminder in at the year mark to just check in and say, hey, I'm thinking about you and hobby today. That's it. Just say the animal's name, use the animal's name. Let them know you're thinking of them and that you know their grief hasn't ended. Because one of the hardest things about this type of grief is that, you know, everyone's maybe nice in the beginning. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, no one cares. And a continued support that you just check in and, you know, just, oh, I thought of hobby today, sending you a hug, right? That goes such a long way.
I mean, and I think you hit another really interesting point that I think also just translates to human death, is that checking on your person that you care about is okay to do, and you're not going to cause them more pain. Because I know when Nikki lost her mom, obviously that was very impactful for her family, and mm-hmm. her and her family were very much on my mind and in my heart. But sometimes I would restrain myself from sending her a text message because I didn't want to upset her, or I knew that she was maybe being bombarded by 100 other people. So I didn't want to be another person jumping up being like, hey, 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 you know. But I think, you know, because it also has been a little bit of time since her mom has passed. And so I think also being able to normalize maybe referencing her in conversations, sometimes it's hard to do because you don't want to derail their day. And that's what I personally worry about as being the person on the other side, is I would hate to send a text like, hey, thinking about you and hobby, you know, when maybe you didn't want to go there and you didn't want to think about it. And then my texts pop up and now like you're sad for the rest of your day because I like mentioned hobby's name and now you're in a puddle.
I definitely want to respond to that, but I want to let Nikki respond first. Nikki, what do you think of that?
I wouldn't be in a puddle. That's just me personally. It would make me feel like you care and that's nice and that you remember and that I'm important to you. I wouldn't be in a puddle. What I find on the flip side is when people don't, and this isn't with my animals, it's just with anything in general, and people don't respond and they don't say anything, that's worse for me. And then I want to cut you off, you know, like.
And it's like she never existed.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And those moments didn't exist and you don't want to talk about them because they're gone. And then you got to move on because that's what you just got to do. You got to, you know, it's been 6 months. It's been 3 months. It's been this month and a year, and you should be fine now. So you're good, you know? So I don't mind the checking in. I don't like the
silence.
The silence unrecognizing situation, but you're not like that, Mariah. You still call and you know what I mean? Like you do all those things, you send stuff. You're very kind.
Not about the hamster.
Not about the hamster. I didn't send hobby anything. And I definitely,
you didn't.
I did not.
You didn't, but I will say, maybe if Marty, something happens to Marty or Mabel, I feel like you would at least check in.
100%. Well, they are also the podcast pups.
Yes. But side note, we got another hamster and we buried Bubbles. Okay. I didn't cremate. It was situational. I would have buried her, but it was because it was the day Reese was very upset. And, you know,
you did what your kids needed you to do. And I respect that as a mom, because there are things that I never thought I would do that I've done for my kids. So I totally get that.
There you go. But yeah, I don't like silence. So I guess That's my answer to that question. Is it the same as what you're going to say or no?
100%. And I just want to go back to Mariah being brave to say it, right? To say, like, you know, that would make me feel weird to send that text. I'm worried about upsetting you. And I hear this universally. And I work with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people going through this. They always want to hear their animal's name. They always want to feel like someone cares, that someone is checking in. Most people go the silent route. And it's so painful. And whatever, Nikki, you described that perfectly. It just feels like it didn't matter. My loss doesn't matter. My animal didn't matter. Or my mom didn't matter. Whatever it is. So over check in, overuse the animal's name from your perspective. And find out the date of that animal's death and just put it in your calendar, even if it's just once a month. And better yet, because we have so much access now with social media, if you have a picture of the animal, even something that Nikki posted on her personal page, send a picture of the animal, right? And bring that memory back into life. Grievers are not afraid to remember their animals. They are not afraid to hear the animal's name. You know what else will be supportive? Hey, do you want to tell me a story? You want to tell me a funny story about Marty? You know, when Marty's time comes, right? Animal grievers never get a chance much to talk about their animals anymore once they're gone. No one asks that question. And you've got hundreds of stories. You've got stories for days, right? And so that's another one. If you're like, I don't know what to say. I've never encountered a griever who was offended because someone recognized their animal by name and got a check-in. And so if that day comes, I'll let you know, Mariah. And people are very afraid of, like, I don't want to make you cry. This happens all the time in person. Like, I don't want to bring it up. But again, normalizing, there's nothing wrong with crying. Even if you bringing up Arnie makes me cry, you know, first of all, when we release sad tears, it puts good chemicals into our brains. It's actually like a natural soother, right? Which is a really cool brain chemistry thing. But crying isn't a bad thing. If I'm crying, it doesn't mean that you've harmed me. It may just mean I'm remembering. I'm remembering that love. I'm remembering that acceptance. I'm remembering that tenderness. I'm remembering his life. And maybe I'm really touched that you even brought it up. So we also just need to be less afraid to have people cry. And if someone does cry, we hold that space for them. We don't judge them. We don't say, stop crying. You know, we're like, you know, you two love each other so much.
Yeah. And I think that that's another interesting component too, because I remember reading this book, and you might know, like, kind of the idea that I'm talking about, but I'm not going to explain it well. But it basically was saying, like, there's different types of people that, like, show up when you're in a trauma experience. And I'm definitely the fixer person. Like, you know, okay, your pet's dying and you want to do a funeral. Great. I am the person you call. I will organize the heck out of that funeral. We will have all the details covered. I will have backup plans. Yep. Like, I need motion and action. And so sometimes I think I force that on the people around me because that's what makes me feel better. But it is, I think, like you said, it's important to just recognize maybe you don't have to have an answer, and maybe it's just allowing that person to share their memory and cry. And that's all that needs to happen. There doesn't have to be a conversation. We don't have to move into a plan. And I think recognizing that, because I never really realized, oh, me trying to fix their pain might actually be more painful than just letting them have the moment to cry.
Beautiful. Breakthrough. You know? That was great.
Yeah, but I really do feel like this is a very odd session, a very deep therapy session.
I love that you said this, though, because listen, this is one of the hardest things people around us, especially our loved ones. Like, so this is something that comes up all the time where, and I talk about this on Instagram a lot, but also in my sessions where someone says to me, oh my God, someone said or did the weirdest thing, or, you know, this hurtful thing. And one of the first things I say, Is that consistent behavior for that person, or is that out of character behavior, right? Because sometimes grief is a revealer of people's limitations, for sure. So sometimes people who've always been kind of like crappy in certain situations, they're going to be consistent and they're not going to really be able to show up for you. And that might be a good moment for you to reevaluate that relationship. But other times, good friends, you know, Mariah, you're a good friend to Nikki, right? So like you've shown up for her a lot. And maybe in an animal loss situation, you're kind of like, ooh, I don't know what to do, because every time she starts crying, like, I want to fix it. And people around us love us and they do want to fix it. So a lot of times, like, if someone starts crying, they're like, well, you know, you can get another dog. They're not trying to hurt you. They're trying to fix it. They're trying to think of something that will make it better.
To solve it. Yeah.
Or they're saying, oh, well, you know, she lived till she was 19. She had a long life, in the person who's speaking mine, they're like, see, I'm trying to point out that, like, see, it's not so bad, but now you've just really minimized the griever's feelings.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's me. You know, I'm the minimizer.
People, and Mariah, I'm assuming you're a good person. Like, you want to fix it, right? And just that awareness about yourself, because guess what? You can't fix it. You can't fix it, and neither can I, right? Nobody can fix it. But what we can do is we can allow those feelings to come. We can make the person feel safe to express those feelings. And even if you think those feelings are absolutely nutty, and believe me, guys, I hear stuff in sessions sometimes where I'm like, wow, I haven't heard this one before. Okay, you know, here we are. Yeah. But being the safe space to just let someone express it. And you know what you could say, Mariah? This would be a good one for you to practice, and anyone else who has the Mariah fixing syndrome. You can work on saying, I don't have any words for this, but I hear you and I'm listening. Or I know I can't fix this for you, but I am holding the space for you. You know, you can kind of like acknowledge it for yourself that you want to fix it and you can't. And you can just say, I'm right here with you. One of my favorite things is, this is so hard. You know, when someone's sharing, to just acknowledge, oh, this is such a hard thing you're going through, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all you need to do. You really don't need to fix it. And really just having the awareness that, okay, my natural mode is going to be, I want to fix it. Like, you know that going in. And you'd be like, what would it be like for me to be released of needing to be a fixer and instead just being a safe place? And that may mean you don't talk as much. That may mean you don't offer solutions. That may mean you don't offer six different ways that you could help. I mean, you sit there with it and let your friend cry or express and just really listen. You know, if you're just quiet and listen, people will keep talking, and that's good for them.
Okay, I have to ask, this may be a silly question, but do you see clients that come to see you because their fish died? Because I can understand cats and dogs, they have personalities and they can interact with you. But are there people that grieve a fish?
I've never had a fish, but I welcome anybody who would like some support on a fish to contact me. I have had a whole assortment of smaller mammals, gerbils, hamsters, guinea pigs, rabbits. I've had a number of different types of reptiles, rats. Rats are really interesting and complex. I've had a lot of rat interaction, and I've learned a lot about rats.
My aunt was very tore up about her rats dying.
Yeah. Well, they have. I've heard they have like a big personality.
They do. The rat people call them pocket dogs, right?
Yes.
And they're really interesting. I have become friends on Instagram with the most famous rat on Instagram. In fact, his name is Ice Cube, the rescued rat, and he has over 20,000 followers. It got him into the Guinness Book of World Records.
He
was a special needs rat, and he has an incredible story. And I have become friends with his guardian, and Ice Cube did pass away, and she and I have become friendly, and I've learned a lot through her and in the rat community about rats. So I've had horses, and I've had birds, you know, parrots. I think what else? I've had a real assortment, no fish yet, but I've had a wide range, and I have learned deeply much more than I ever would have known about all these different types of relationships. And I am moved by them every time. Of course, we understand cats and dogs, but beyond that, there's a lot more, and there's always more to learn. But the fundamentals are the same for all of them. And look, a lot of what we get from any of our animal companions are things like acceptance, nurturing, joy, play, never letting you down, never, you know, judging you for what you are or what you aren't or what you're doing or not doing. They bring a lot of companionship. They bring a lot of interaction. We talk to our animals, sometimes more than our spouses. We touch our animals more than sometimes even our spouses or kids. They are so ingrained in our daily routine. They're woven into every aspect of our lives. And so it doesn't really matter what type of animal it is. That animal is an integral part of many people's existence. Maybe not yours, Mariah, but many people.
No, definitely not. Like, you're not describing me.
And so kind of regardless of the species or the type of animal, the feelings of attachment that go along with that intimacy, because these are intimate relationships, they are very deep.
This might be like an insensitive question, but do you find that when you help people, like, there is, I don't know how to phrase it, an end point where it's like, okay, they're healed, we've worked through our grief and we're good? Because I feel with human loss, and maybe it's the same with pet loss, but I feel with human loss every year, there's going to be something that comes up that triggers that pain or that experience and isn't something that necessarily goes away. Is it the same for individuals that have that kind of relationship with their pets, or is it more something that they truly are able to separate from at some point?
That's a wonderful question. That's a great question. Look, grief counseling, one of the ways it's a little different than therapy, there's a lot of differences, but one of the things is that it is considered to be sort of short-term kind of crisis-based work, right? Like, I'm a really crappy grief counselor if we're still doing this in a year, right? So people work with me in a shorter period of time. And what I do, which is sometimes different than therapy too, is my mission is to give everybody as many tools as possible to help them adjust to this loss, integrate this loss into their life. It's going to be there forever. We never stop grieving. I'm grieving Arnie right now. It never stops. But the way that we can integrate our loss, adjust to it, and then use tools to help us, you know, connect with our animals, move through our feelings, release some of our guilt, right? Those are things that you can learn. And so hopefully by the time you've left me, you've got a whole toolbox of tools. They're going to be helpful to you, not just for your next animal death, but also for your next human loss, for your next divorce, for your next job loss, for your next medical crisis, right? You know, a lot of the types of tools that I use with my clients are things that are going to be in their life, right? So most people work with me 4, 5, 6 months is kind of an average, right? Some people longer because some circumstances are more traumatic. We're working through other things. And sometimes it's shorter. It just depends, right? But the idea is that you do get to an end point in grief counseling. And usually how that works is like, you know, at some point we're like, oh, you know, I'm feeling a little better, a little lighter. We've released a lot of the guilt. We've moved through some of my anger, you know, some of the like the intense acute stuff. And now I'm like, all right, we'll meet like every 2 weeks instead of every week, right? And then maybe it's like, oh, maybe we'll check in once a month. And it's kind of like a drop down, and then someone's like, I'm ready to graduate. And then we graduate, and it's great. So I do think there is like an end point to grief counseling. That said, sometimes people come back. It's been like 8 months and they're thinking about welcoming a new animal into their home. And so we do a session or two about that, working through kind of the feelings that come up around that. Or sometimes on the anniversary, a lot of my clients come back for the 1 year anniversary to just kind of check in and see how things are going. So people will come back on certain key dates. But if I've done my job right, most people leave, complete their work with me, and feel like they have what they need to be able to sort of navigate on their own.
I think that's a lot like human grief therapy too, because it's, yeah, you're not always going to it. It's just, it kind of evolves into just other stuff like life. My therapist said when I went for my mom, you know, she's like, if you're here in 3 years as you are the day you came in, then we have a problem, you know?
Yeah.
There's something deeper to that. But I think it's normal to be tore up for a little bit of time and then it gets a little bit easier. But you never forget. You never move on, you know? Nope. You just move with it, I guess.
Yeah. And it changes over time. You know, it's interesting, like, the way that your grief interacts with you will change over time based on what else is going on in your life and what other things are coming up. And so, you know, I really work with my clients on being flexible and being open and to keep trying different things and like, okay, this thing used to make me feel really connected, but now it doesn't. Okay, let's try something new, you know? And so it's kind of this dance that you're always doing to find new ways. And I experience that in my own grief. I mean, an advantage is I have a lot more time on this than most of my clients do. So I'm further in the journey. And so I can kind of see like, okay, here's some things that come up down the road that maybe you want to think about 5 years later, right? So it's an evergreen, ongoing process, I think, learning to sort of live with deep grief. But at the same time, you know, one of the things I was going to say, Mariah, too, about that is that animal loss hits differently than human loss in a lot of ways. And also, many people I work with haven't ever been through a significant human or animal loss before, because many of the people I work with, this is like their first animal maybe that they got like right out of college. And, you know, now the animal's, you know, 15, 16, 17. I mean, that's just, you know, that's some situations, not every situation. So now this is kind of the first big loss. They haven't lost parents or siblings yet, right? And they haven't gone through an adult animal loss. And so that also just stirs up kind of an added layer for people, which is not to say that just because you've been through human loss, you're going to animal loss is easier, because it isn't. But sometimes it's just, for some people, it's like the first one, the first time they've really had to think about it. And that makes it harder for them in some ways as well. So sometimes doing this kind of work and getting some tools makes people feel more confident to move through any other type of loss in the future. It's one of the reasons I'm double certified. I'm certified to work with human loss as well. And I don't do that at all on its own. But so many of my clients, either while we're working together or before we start working together or some version of it, are also experiencing human loss. And so those two things interact with each other sometimes. And so some of the things that you would do if you're working on humans, we might bring in to this type of grief counseling if that's going on in their life. So that's also another reason, just going back to the idea of like, is there an endpoint? You know, for some people, because this is their very first time, they just feel totally in the wilderness about what even is this going to be like, my grief.
Yeah. And I can appreciate the work that you do, because if I was in a situation where I lost a pet and was beside myself, I think it would be helpful to have a resource and to be able to talk about it. Because, you know, I know Nikki can say, you know, when her mom got sick and shortly after she passed, that's where she went. She went to the internet. Where are the people that have actually gone through this and mm-hmm. who can relate? And they don't just see the pain, they have felt the pain. And I think that you're looking for that sense of community to help guide you through. Yeah. And I think that that is also sometimes what makes me feel emotionally unavailable for people's pet loss is I've never felt that and I've never had that connection. And so mm-hmm. I don't know what you're feeling. I can't even imagine it. I just can't. Like, I'm just like, yeah, it's just okay. So the work that you're doing and the platform that you provide for people, I think it's incredible, because I don't want to diminish anybody's pain. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, I have a very good friend whose dog passed away last year and it destroyed her. But that dog moved with her through several state moves and was with her through her divorce. And was just a big part of her life. And she was devastated. And I felt bad for her because my person was hurting. And even though I couldn't understand her hurt, you do still feel bad. And so I don't want anyone to think I'm heartless, but I do find it difficult to understand that loss. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate that there are people in the world that do what you do for the people that need a little bit of help and guidance to understand how to move forward and how to integrate their loss into the next chapter of their life.
Well, you know, grief does present us with opportunities, right? There are things to be learned from grief. There are ways to expand and grow in grief. And of course, that's a hard thing to hear on day one. For anybody listening, like, you know, when grief is before me, when someone else I love is grieving, what's my opportunity for growth? What's my opportunity to get outside of my comfort zone and mm-hmm. show up? And mm-hmm. so I think if we quit viewing grief as something we need to hide and shove away and fix and manage, you know, if we keep thinking of it like that and we think of it more as like, okay, this is an opportunity before me to evolve and grow and challenge myself and try to be here for someone else, maybe that makes it, you know, a little more palatable for you as the support.
For sure.
Gosh. I'm going to be watching you next time an animal passes away.
I know. Now closely. You're going to be watching my every move. Oh, goodness, the pressure.
Well, also, Mariah, on my Instagram, if you go on there, I make posts all the time. And, you know, I have one the other day, like, here's 7 things to say to someone if you don't know what to say. So, you know, yeah, you're
I'm going to need to, like, pin that post, I think.
Pin the post, save the post. Yeah. And I put that on my post, I save this. And a lot of people, you know, really respond to that. They're like, oh, thank goodness I have something to say because I didn't know what to say.
Yeah, because you don't know what to say.
Can I give you another tip, Mariah?
Just sure.
Pro tip on this?
Yeah.
Really listen to the way that someone talks about their animals. So for example, Nikki, can I use you?
Oh yeah.
How do you refer to Marty and Mabel? Do you refer to them like as your fur kids, as your dogs, as your fur babies? Like what, how do you call them like that?
I just call them like as normal, like Marty and Mabel. They're just people. They're like Reese, Ryder, Ryan, like all my people. I just call them by their names because they're part of the family. It's just like one and the same.
Part of the family. Okay.
Yeah.
And Nikki, are you like a team Rainbow Bridge? Are you like not into the afterlife? Or do you have any like afterlife belief?
Yeah, I feel like there's something in the afterlife. I feel like they go somewhere. They go with your people because they're a part of your family. So I feel like they're all just waiting for me when I go over the Rainbow Bridge myself. They're all going to be jumping up on me like normal.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Thank you. That was very illustrative. So Mariah, if you're Nikki's friend and you're listening, yes, you know now, even before this happens, that when Marty or Mabel dies, you're going to want to say things like, I'm so glad that Mabel was a part of your family. I'm thinking of Mabel as she crosses the Rainbow Bridge. You know, someday, won't it be wonderful to see Marty and Mabel bounding toward you when you get there? Now, you don't need to believe any of that, Mariah. That does not need to be your jam. And I don't need to believe it either. But that's Nikki's jam, right? Because we were listening. Yep. We were listening to how she talked about them, right? And this is a big thing for anybody who's listening right now. Listen to how your people refer to their animals. Like some people love the word fur baby. Other people think that's pejorative, right? But sure, if you really listen and listen to what people say and how they talk about them, our grievers give us the clues of what to say. The social media posts, look at what people write about their animals when they make the post that my animal has died. And then you know you have some language to mirror back to them. Mirroring back what people say and just like you know, showing that you understand what they're saying and that you really listened. See, it would be weird if, you know, you never referred to Marty and Mabel as family members, if that's how Nikki sees it, right? So mm-hmm. also, I always say to people who get panicked about, what do I say? I'm like, just listen to what they say and then just say it back to them in a different way so that you're on board with their language around this. And that's really helpful if you have any anxiety about what do I say?
Okay, that's a good tip. I can pocket that one as well. Yeah. I like that. I like it. Any other questions? I just realized the time. I knew this was going to happen, Beth. I knew we were going to keep you forever.
It's all right. I'm here to help.
I mean, really, you were here to do a therapy session. You didn't know it, though.
I did not know it, but I am here for it. I love it. It's just like, you don't need to get it, Mariah. You really don't. And you don't need to give yourself a hard time for not getting it. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you don't get it. And that's okay. And look, there's a whole bunch of reasons. They're pretty obvious to me about why I don't like exercise. I truly don't understand people who like run marathons. I would rather do anything than run a marathon. You know, the people are like, exercise gives me endorphins. It's better than sex. No, no, it's not. That is insane to me, right? Like I'm not a runner.
Yeah.
But I believe that's true for some people. I just really don't get it. So whenever one of my friends is like, oh, I'm going to do a couch to 5K, you gotta like take a breath and be like, I don't get it. But how can I help? You know, do you want me to come cheer you on at the finish line with my, you know, my hot cocoa, whatever it is. It's kind of like that. We just have to be able to show up despite what we don't get. Right.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yes.
Absolutely. I think for me, it was, what am I lacking that I don't understand this? Why do I not feel more sympathetic? But like she said, I don't have to get it. And yeah. That's fine. I'm not just, I just won't put the mind power into that. Because I don't need to.
No. And it probably doesn't help you to waste any energy on that. I'd rather you just thinking about compassionate responses and, you know, coming up with like a go-to gift, something I love, just like, you know, pro tip. Like I love when people, you know, send beautiful things with images of their animal on it. Like one of the things I love is Shutterfly. This is not a commercial. They don't pay me for this. But you can get this anywhere. Like, but you can get like a journal for people to write in and you can custom like, you know, pictures on the cover. So like, that's one of my favorite go-to gifts. Whenever someone's animal dies, I just take their photos from social media. I make a little collage on the front. I put the animal's name on the spine and I send it to them. So they have a place where they can write to their animal and journal about their animal. So that's a super easy thing. And, you know, send a DoorDash gift card so someone doesn't have to cook dinner one of the days when their animal dies, you know, or send food over, send a delivery, right? Like, you don't have to be like, I totally understand why your dog was your soulmate. You just have to do things that are going to be supportive. Right? So,
yeah. And I mean, the crazy thing is, though, like everything you're saying is what I would do for someone who had a human death.
That's right.
I just never would think to apply it to an animal death.
It's not like you have to do this for every single person either, because maybe there's other people who aren't as affected. But the people you know that feel this way, that are impacted, and we can spot them from a mile away, mm-hmm. that's who you want to show up like this for, you know? And if you're not sure, err on the side of, you know, doing all the things. Because it doesn't hurt. To acknowledge anybody's grief ever.
No. And I think that that's an important takeaway too, because I think, like you said, we try to all kind of shy away from it because we don't want to like, we don't want to deal with the emotion, the crying, the like all of that, but it feels like abandonment. So let's keep showing up for people, even if it makes us uncomfortable.
Truth.
There you go.
Love it.
Nikki, you got anything else? Sorry, I derailed you earlier. And did you have any other questions? Anything?
I think no? I'm good.
Okay. Well, let's do just two quick little easy fun questions. And then Beth, we'll let you go because we've kept you so long.
Sounds good to me.
Go ahead, Nikki.
Okay. What is something that you collect?
I collect a lot of things. Sea glass
is
one of them.
So cool. Nice. What do you do with it?
Well, you can do a lot of things with it. I haven't done much lately because I'm awfully busy, but you can like make jewelry out of it. You can make art out of it. You can make sculptures out of it. But right now I just have some beautiful places in my garden where I sort of have like the different colors. I have it sorted by color. I'm so dorky. And I have like different colors of sea glass kind of collections together interspersed with some of my plants and my succulents. So yeah, I love sea glass. It's just so beautiful. And I love the metaphor of it, right? Like glass goes into the water jagged and broken, right? And over time and sand and water and currents and tides, it smooths and the edges smooth and it comes out this beautiful new color with beautiful new shape. And it just feels like a real tribute to survival and healing. So that's about it.
I like it. Awesome. I like that one.
Yeah. Thanks.
I think I'm going to do a different one. I think I'm going to ask you an offbeat one, Beth. If you were to become reincarnated as an animal, what animal would you want to be?
I would want to be the animal of any of my pet loss grief counseling clients.
Aww.
I say this all the time. I say to my clients, if I die and come back, I want to be your dog or your cat. Because the people I work with are so inspiring. They are filled with so much love. They have given their animals such amazing lives. They have done incredible things to ensure their animals are safe and loved and cared for and inspired and playing. And so I have no hesitation in answering that question. I would come back as the animal of any of my pet loss grief counseling clients. I would be so thrilled and honored and have the best life ever to be in any of their care.
Aw, that's so sweet.
Yeah, that is.
Truth.
I love it.
That's facts. I am so in awe of my clients and their devotion to their animals and the things they have done to give their animals amazing lives. So I would be in good hands.
That's awesome.
Well, Beth, this was so good. I mean, we're going to have to listen back and make sure we didn't really skip over asking you anything super important, but I feel like you taught us a lot.
There's a lot going on. So.
Yeah, there exactly. is. It's complex. It's very, very complex.
It is. And it's called disenfranchised grief for a reason. You know, disenfranchised is a term we use around grief that isn't publicly recognized in our culture. So like, you know, no one gets bereavement days for pet loss grief. No one gets, you know, time off work. You know, no one gets casseroles usually. So shining a spotlight on disenfranchised grief is so important. And pet loss is one of those. So thank you for giving the opportunity to help bring this into light.
Yeah, absolutely. It was our pleasure to have you and have you talk to us.
Well, thank you, guys. I so appreciate you really, truly, you know, giving this some light because it affects millions and millions of people and they all feel alone. Everyone who comes to me is like, is it weird that I feel so bad? Am I crazy? You know, all day, every day. And I'm like, no. And, you know, but we're still really in the dark ages about letting people know it's okay to mourn and grieve like this. So I really, it just means so much to me. Anytime anybody wants to talk about it, I am down. I am here for it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that.
For sure. All right, my friends. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Yes, thank you.
Take
you
care.
Too.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
So how did you enjoy? This was a rather long episode, everybody. So how did you enjoy I kind of feel like it was therapy. So our therapy session with Beth, it was pet loss. I mean, it just felt like I felt a lot of feelings.
I felt like you were on the couch, you know?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it rehabilitated you a little bit. No,
I mean, I think that's a tough question.
Are you going to need shock therapy to rehabilitate that?
Look, I will say I will always have empathy for the people in my life that are experiencing loss, whether that's human loss or pet loss. And while I still may not have the same reaction that you would have to a pet loss,
okay,
I can appreciate and respect your feelings and show up for you the best way that I can.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay.
I like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not heartless. You care about people and you do care about animals. You just don't see them in the same light as 95% of the world.
I don't know if I see them in the same light. They just don't impact me the same. But I still stand by my statement that maybe it's just not the right pet.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe.
Like
maybe you haven't had your one.
I haven't had that one. That like makes, it's like people, right? Like people who swear they never going to get married. And then all of a sudden they're like, I met this person and I just knew
there
I'm
going to
be
go.
Married and spend the rest of my life. So maybe I just need that pet that's going to change my life and impact my life in a way that I never would have expected. And then I'll be the person that's like on the floor and like, you know,
devastated. Yeah.
Devastated.
Yes. You haven't maybe found your Norman.
Yeah. My Norman is out there.
Yes.
We just haven't bumped into each other yet.
Exactly.
So I believe that. I believe that too. I believe like, you know, sometimes you have to live through the experiences and I just haven't had that experience and connection. So
yeah,
there we go. I digress. But I will say Beth is wonderful.
Right?
And there are people that need her. And if I was in a position where I needed her, she's it, man. She feels like a warm hug.
Yeah. She really, and it was funny because when she was talking and saying certain things, it was exactly how it was when I was in like grief therapy for people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then
because it's probably very similar. Right?
It is. Yeah. Like yeah. It's kind of, and the feelings are very similar, especially because I will say I have lost a person that I loved, you know, people that I've loved. And then mm-hmm. I've lost obviously my pets. And for me, it's the same feeling, like obviously different experience because it's your family and whatever else, but my dogs are my family. So it's still that same devastation. Like they're not there anymore. Like, you know, and the same feelings for me at least, you know? Mm-hmm. So when she was saying these things, I felt like I could apply it to how I felt when people were dying and I felt the same way when my dogs were dying, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
So yeah, her services, I feel like could serve us both, you know, people and pet.
Yes.
If you
I think
love
so.
Animals and need to, you know what I mean? Have that. I don't even know what you call it. Like
closure.
There support. You go. Support and closure. There you go. Not yeah. even closure, but just like, yeah, like
acceptance. Maybe it's
there
acceptance.
You go. Acceptance. Yes. There mm-hmm. you go. Yeah.
I mean, she definitely seems like the right person to guide you through the process, to help you not feel lost in the feelings or yeah. feel too overwhelmed in the feelings. To normalize
like
them.
It's normal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I can imagine there are other people like me in the world that maybe, you know, you try to convey your heartbreak over losing your animal and they're just kind of like, yeah, okay. So how was your Wednesday? You know, they don't fully grasp the loss. And yeah. I think it does volumes to go somewhere and be seen and be heard and feel understood.
Yeah.
And for that, I'm very grateful for the work that Beth does and providing that space for people that need it. Right.
No,
it's cool.
Her. Loved yeah. it.
She's great.
You know, I loved it. Anything pets, I love.
You're all over it. I know. I know.
I don't know if I like taxidermy, but I might. Who knows?
I mean, maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's really upping your level of love for pets because if you start telling me you're doing that next, that might be a little harder for me to accept.
I mean, I'm not going to rule it out. I'm not going to lie, but
okay, great.
I'm not. Yeah, it could be a possibility. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, if you are in a position where you feel like you could benefit from having a conversation with Beth, we encourage you to reach out to her. You can definitely send her a message again on Instagram, honoring our animals. And we will have the link to her page in the show notes. And if you have any questions that we can help or help you connect to Beth, please send us a message. We're happy to facilitate that and get you connected. Until next month. So yeah, just a reminder that we will be doing just two episodes again in August. So one episode for everybody and then a bonus episode for Patreons. So if you miss us and want more of us in your life in August, please consider signing up for the Patreon level. We have different levels there. You get access to all sorts of things, book club, photos from guests, candles and swag and stickers and all the things. And it really helps Nikki and I get funds to improve the podcast for editing purposes, equipment, advertising, all the fun things. So if you miss us, that's a great way to help out the show and to get your fix of the podcast. And I think that's it, right? I've hit it all. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we will be back here in August and everybody stay safe and enjoy the rest of summer. And we'll talk to you all soon.
Okay. See you later.
All right. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting us. We do encourage you to follow us at Instagram at Body to Burial. Hit us up on Twitter at Body to Burial. And you guessed it, you can send us an email to hello@bodytoburial.com.
If you have any guest suggestions, just let us know. Please hit the subscribe button or follow button on whatever app you are listening to.
Thanks so much, guys. See you next time.